Hi, welcome to Coming to America, a podcast where we share the stories of immigrants in the United States. I'm Ed Hala, originally from the Czech Republic, and I've been living in the States since June 11th, 2001. In this podcast, we will talk to people who decided to leave everything behind in their original homes and countries to become part of this imperfect union called the USA. As this year is an election year, immigration is a significant part of our political discourse. We hope our podcast can offer valuable perspectives and contribute meaningfully to the narrative about those who have made the United States their home. Join us as we explore the diverse experiences and stories of immigrants who have embarked on this incredible journey. Today's guest is Leandro. Originally from Brasilia, Brazil, moved to the US in 1999 and has been residing in Portland since 2009 with his wife Valerie and their Maltese dog Jobin. He is a structural engineer and the owner of LSP Structural. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you for coming all the way from Brazil.
Thank you.
So how is growing up in Brasilia?
Oh, well, it was fun, like, at the time. Like, I was born, like, you know, in the 70s, you know, So Brasilia was just starting.
Yeah.
I'm a first-generation Brazilian, because everybody that parents of my friends, nobody's from Brasilia.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm sort of the first generation. That came.
Brasilia is a very fascinating place.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
It was established in 1956 as a new city.
Exactly, right? Yeah. So it was officially, like, inaugurated in 1960. Yeah. That was just a way that the government found just to bring the population more inland in Brazil. You know, the capital was Rio de Janeiro prior to Brasilia. But most of the population was along the coast.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was just one of the ways that they found us. Like, hey, let's try to bring the population in.
Yeah, that was the president inside. Kubitschek.
Yeah, yeah, Juscelino Kubitschek. Yeah.
Yeah, Juscelino Kubitschek. His mom was Czech.
Yes.
Origin. Kubitschek means a little Jacob.
Yeah.
In Czech. But it was an experiment, right? It was like an airplane design city?
Yeah, so I think this was likely like one of these first like entirely designed city, you know.
As an urban planning
experiment, there was, yeah, right? It was a very much an urban planning experiment. They got two guys to pretty much design
what was the whole thing.
So the architect name was Oscar Niemeyer, very famous architect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the white buildings, modern.
Yes, all the concrete structures.
Yes.
He's a very distinct sort of architectural style. You know, a lot of architectural students, I think they like going to Brasilia because of that. They go and just see all the amazing structures that he designed there.
I never met anybody from Brasilia.
Oh, really?
I used to do business in Brazil, in Curitiba.
Yeah.
What's the name of the region? Paraná.
Paraná. Paraná is the state.
State.
Yeah.
Sorry, not a region. And I was thinking to go to Brasilia, but I went to Rio.
Yeah.
Because Rio is beautiful.
Yeah. You know, Brasilia, you know, it's...
How was it in this like modern design city? Did it make sense?
So like growing up there was nice because I think I grew in a city that it was closest to what was envisioned when they planned the city. Yeah. You know, now of course it has changed a lot. Population grew and the city grew itself in a way that is not necessarily what it was back then. So it was great. Oh, well, I didn't have a way of comparison, you know. I grew up there, I was born there. So,
that they had districts. It was like a hotel district.
Exactly.
Government district. No.
So everything is very distinct. So yeah, yes. There is the area for government. It's sort of shaped as an airplane. So
yeah,
the middle
wings,
of the airplane,
right?
That's where usually the government entities are.
Which wing did you live in?
So I lived in the north wing. And the wings, so the body of the airplane was sort of where all the government buildings were. And then the wings were the residential and commercial.
So you live in one of those wings. So your school was in the same wing?
Or exactly. It was in the same wing.
Okay, I didn't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there is, it's not like here.
Do you know how many people live there now?
Oh, now I have no idea.
And when you were there, is it like Portland or smaller?
Oh, well, back then was probably smaller than Portland. Yeah. Okay. But now it's a lot bigger. Yeah. Okay. Now it's a...
million?
No, it's way more than that. Like the Brazilian metropolitan area is like a, I don't know, like it's probably the one of the, I don't know, maybe the fifth largest population around the country. I'm not so sure about those numbers, but it's pretty big.
Because I thought, you know, if it's not growing organically, it's not a success, right? Yeah. So what you're saying is actually it succeeded. It's fascinating because in 50s, 60s, the communist government had similar ideas, right? We will construct cities for our workforce and everything. So they built these, you know, Russian avenues, I forgot, the boulevards, right? And these like kind of ugly architecture buildings. But it's not that nice now.
Yeah.
But Brasilia then means it worked out.
You know, depends on the perspective. To me, I will say when I go back there and visit, I don't enjoy as much as I did in the past. I think it grew way too much in a way that I think it took away a little bit what was distinct about the city.
I see.
But you know, the city it's kind of weird in a way. Like Brasília itself, I'm just talking about the capital, the airplane area.
Yeah,
it is just like this city that was designed thinking of a place of government, a place that everything was thought out. So it's not a natural growing city.
It's not organic, right?
So it's not organic. So like, we always joked, at least back then, it's a city without corners because there's actually no street that comes to another street, that there is a building that is actually blocking the corner. So there's no corners. Everything just feels very open. The area of government at the time, I think they thought that they built this place that it would be hard for people to congregate and have protests, you know, because everything was just so spread out.
But of course, with the
latest protest we have had in Brazil with the government, of course, that, you know, that was kind of proven to not be effective.
It's not bad, though.
You know, it was not effective, but I think that was the thought behind a lot of things.
Was your family like, what was your, you know, very middle class or what was
middle class? We just grew up in a small house there. But I lived in Brasília just until I was about 13 years old, and then we moved away.
Okay,
so we were not there the whole time. Most of my family is still there, but my immediate family, like my mom and dad at the time and my brothers, we moved to the city 2 hours away called Goiânia.
I see.
That is near Brasília.
Okay. Yeah, Rio de Janeiro, I mean, it's the most beautiful city I ever seen in my life. I'm serious. It's, you know, I get the issues with poverty and favelas and everything. Having tropical beach with these hills and mountains next to it, that striking contrast, I've never seen anything like that.
Sometimes I joke, of course, you know, because without the issues there, you know, and other part of it, that I would say for sure that it's a city that is the most beautiful city when you see flying in. Once you land, of course, you see not as beautiful. I would think that maybe when Rio was, like, I don't know, maybe in the 40s, in the 50s, when I think there was sort of that...
Yeah,
the golden times of Brazil, I guess. That place was a paradise. Now, you know, like...
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's, you know, if we live in this Instagram world, it's the most Instagrammable, you know, most beautiful city for Instagram. That's the proper English, right?
Yeah. So it's beautiful, you know, all these big rocks and everything. Yeah. It's very unique.
And then, you know, Curitiba, where I used to have a small office for my business, that reminded me lots of about Portland, very green city, environmental, you know, thinking and progressive ideas. So Brazil is very, you know, the diversity of this, it's so huge. The country is so huge.
Yeah.
And then I visited the Fogo de Iguaçu. What's the name?
Foz do Iguaçu. Yeah.
Say that again.
Foz do Iguaçu.
Foz de Iguaçu.
Yeah, that Foz is like yeah, that's the
largest
the big
waterfall.
Yeah,
it's the largest in the world, right?
Yeah, yeah. So by water volume.
By water volume.
By water volume. Yeah, yeah. It's like it is. I think I'm not so sure if it's just three, but it's like it's right at the border of Brazil and Argentina.
Yeah,
yeah. So half is in Argentina, half is in Brazil.
Yeah, because I was on the border and I didn't have my passport, so I stay on the on the Brazilian part. But it's just miles and miles.
Yeah, it is it is like Niagara Falls on steroids. Yeah, yeah, it's like it's pretty amazing. I never been there. Like,
you've never been there?
Never been there.
I actually that was we took an airplane trip to Foz de Iguaçu.
Foz de Iguaçu.
Foz de Iguaçu. Sorry about that. I didn't practice my Portuguese for this podcast. but it's just beautiful. I'm just saying, it's like the Brazil is such a unique country. I love the culture, the music, right?
Yeah. I think the music is
the sport.
Is the best export that Brazil has to the world. Yeah. I think the music.
But it's so unique, and it's like the happiness of the sound.
Yeah.
Right? It's almost like the soul. You can see the Brazilian soul in it.
Yeah.
It's just so pleasant, so happy. It can be sad too, but it's like just so. It just strikes these different chords in your soul. I love it.
Yeah.
But yeah, Brazil had lots of issues. Modern country, right?
Yeah.
The demographics are not that great. The presidential elections. You have now Lula is the president, right?
Lula is the president, yeah. And I haven't really followed much the politics lately.
Yeah.
I voted for Lula this time.
You can vote?
Yeah, yeah, I'm Brazilian citizen. Yeah,
you're
so
not American?
I'm American citizen and I'm Brazilian citizen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
So I have both citizenships. And so in Brazil, you have two votes required by law.
No
so
way.
So even if you're abroad, like you either had to, you have to,
what's the
to
punishment?
Justify your vote. Oh, well, the punishment is, it's not necessarily a punishment. You either pay a fine that is very small. It's just more symbolic. It's just the work that you have
That's
to do.
That's great, though.
Yeah, so, but it is required by law. So if you don't have everything in order, let's say if you haven't voted or you haven't got your situation cleared, you don't have, you cannot get a passport, you cannot enroll in at the university. So there's all these requirements. So even me being abroad, not living in Brazil, I'm required to either vote or I have to send a letter justifying to a judge that I'm not voting.
Yeah. But you are a citizen, right? So the government gives you lots of things. So one thing that you can do for your government is vote.
Exactly, yeah. So Brazil, you're required by vote. You can start voting when you're 16 there.
Oh, amazing.
So
the Czech Republic, if I want to vote, I have to fly to Washington, D.C.
Yeah, no, so yeah. Because, so that's a tough one, yeah.
No, but it's Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
The corrupt politicians don't get votes of expats, like, you know, if you emigrate from Czech Republic, you usually have this objectivity, right?
Yeah.
That's great about being immigrant, because you see the world in a little context.
Yeah.
Right. So the bad guys never won. Well, they never, you know, they don't want the expats to vote because they will never get their vote.
Yeah.
So if I want to vote, some of my Czech, you know, compatriots would fly to DC.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I just don't. But I like what you're saying about the duty that is mandatory.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's mandatory.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You either do it or you just have to fill out some paperwork
exactly.
and send it out.
Exactly.
So it's easy just to choose to go and vote.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
I don't know how it is nowadays because I left Brazil a long time ago.
When did you leave?
I left Brazil in 1999.
Yes.
I moved to the U.S., December 4th, 1999.
Okay.
So
June 11th, 2001.
Yes. So
we all measure.
I know. We all remember the dates.
Yes.
Back then, at least, if election day fell like in the middle of a week or something, it would be sort of an official holiday. So
nice.
Because, you know, you're required to vote. So the government had to give you a day that you can just not work and do
it. Yes.
And back then was also that you cannot buy alcohol during election day.
That's great.
So I don't know if it is like that still. So maybe parts of it, maybe elections there happen on a weekend. I'm not so familiar with, you know, things change.
Yeah.
But that's how it was back then. Yeah. So that was kind of nice. So there was never an excuse like, hey, you have to vote. Today's a holiday. Take your time off. People just buy their alcohol the day before, so they'll have at home. So that's not an issue.
No, but this is thing that it actually make, this is a common sense what you're describing. Yeah.
So with all the problems that Brazil has, amazingly enough, the election system there, it's actually, that's one of the models when sometimes when you hear people complain about the election system here in the US.
Yeah.
Very so often you hear commentators and say, hey, we shouldn't look into the model of Brazilian elections because there is a unified system. We've been voting electronically for, almost 30 years.
That same in Portland, right?
Elections, you get the results like the same day. Mm-hmm. So it's quite interesting. And like, for example, for me, because I still require to vote living here in the US, like every consulate, of course, they open up a place mm-hmm. to vote. So I was living in New York last year, so I went to vote in New York. Mm-hmm. Ironically, the same day as the general elections in the US happened, the midterm. So I voted twice on the same day. Whenever there is a big Brazilian population in a city in which you don't have a consulate, if there's enough of a number of people, they will actually put a voting station. So Portland has a place. So when there are Brazilian elections, there is a place in Portland to go vote for the Brazilian election.
Oh, that's amazing.
So you don't have to go far.
This is great. Yeah. I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
So because with all the flaws and all the corruption we have there, at least the election system, it's a very efficient system.
And that's what I'm saying. It's no brainer because I vote here via mail, and the same in Czech Republic. They try to introduce the voting mail and electronics, and it's like, they said they will be, corrupted or abused or whatever they come up with. And I'm like, no, it's been 25 years in Oregon, no issues.
Yeah.
And it's actually when you vote, usually you have like there's, president is one of the choices, but then there's 17 other positions. Yeah. What I do is I sit on my phone texting with my friends about each name.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's so important, and you like nothing in life you would take that nonchalant. Let me just scramble. Who is your district attorney? I don't know.
Yeah.
You go and you start looking what they stand for and everything. Yeah. And it takes me about 2 hours to fill it up.
Yeah.
Then, because it's texting to all the people in, district attorneys. So you have to my friend lawyer, who is it, right? But that's, why would you not take it seriously? You would never go to school. You would never send your kids to school that you don't research. Yeah. You don't take anything that lightly.
Yeah.
And it should be like that. So I'm inspired. That's a great story about Brazil.
Yeah.
I just learned something new. And thank you for sharing that. So tell me about, why did you move to US? What happened?
So I moved to the US. So it was not like something that I had planned. It just happened.
You bought at least ticket now.
Yeah, no, but what I'm saying is I had no intention necessarily to immigrate to the US. I was in Brazil when I was still finishing college in Brazil.
Yeah.
Was in college in 1997.
What did you study?
I studied physical education.
Okay.
My first degree when I was mm-hmm. in Brazil. I started dating an American girl, and we end up after a few, 2 years, mm-hmm. We end up getting married.
No way.
So,
dude.
So I was living in Brazil. She was from actually from Oregon. Yeah, she was from Oregon.
Yeah.
So we moved. We were living in Brazil. We got married, and we just there living there.
What city?
In Goiânia.
Okay.
In Goiânia, in Brazil. City, but she had just one sister, and her sister had married some person from New Zealand and had moved to New Zealand. So mm-hmm. so she had her mom here living in the U.S. by herself, mm-hmm. With two daughters that married foreign people.
Yeah.
One living in Brazil, one in New Zealand,
Really far.
Very far from each other. So my wife, then ex-wife now, she decided to move back to the US to stay close to her mom. Mm-hmm. So that's what pretty much brought us here.
So you
packed,
she's like, I gotta move.
So we gotta move. So we were married in Brazil. So she's like, hey, let's just move back. So right after I finished college.
So you spoke really well English.
I spoke no English, zero English.
You cannot date without English.
She spoke Portuguese. That's why she was in Brazil. Yeah, she was teaching English in Brazil.
I have to tell our
listeners, but she was fluent in Portuguese.
The best English classes I ever taken was when you start dating American, because my English was not that good.
Yeah.
And dating really helps. So that's so you didn't speak
English? So I speak no English. No, we just spoke Portuguese at home. So
that was hard.
It was, because I, you know, when I moved to the US, different than a lot of people when they move here, you know, they're young enough that it's easier to pick up. You know, of course, a lot of people that move here, I moved as an adult, but I had no English.
How old were you?
So I moved to the US when I was 22 years old.
So you moved with no English?
Yeah. So I moved here. I was 22. I was a recent grad. You know, I had gotten my degree in physical education. But I moved here, I knew no English. So,
classes. Teachers.
So, yeah. So when we moved, we were for a month or so in Oregon, and then we decided to move to California. Mm-hmm. So we established ourselves in Sacramento, California.
Oh, nice.
You know, California, I guess many states do that, but they offered, free English classes for, you know,
immigrants.
Immigrants. Yeah. So it's an adult school, like no kids. So I took classes. It was almost like going back to school, you know. I had classes in the morning, like weekly. I would go to this adult school just to...
Because your teacher didn't speak Portuguese, right? So it's full immersion.
No, so it's full immersion because the teacher, of course, just spoke English.
Yeah.
And my colleagues, this was a small class. I would say we were about 20.
Yeah,
I still have some photos that we had from Heritage Day, but I kind of remember I had like two Russian friends. I had a Mexican friend. There was two from Ukraine, one from Kazakhstan. There was a Chinese, a Vietnamese, an Indian, me Brazilian. So it was like, you cannot even speak. It was not like I had another Brazilian to be speaking Portuguese on the side. So everybody spoke a different language. So that was quite interesting, you know. So with that, that was, you know, very basic. And it was just watching a lot of TV, trying to read newspapers. So I never really had formal English classes. So I just had to force myself into it. It took a little while for me to feel confident. I would say maybe about a year to a year and a half to kind of get a job that I felt confident that I could speak English.
So, we've done, you come to California, you learn English. So, how did you end up in Oregon?
So, yeah, so I was in California backtracking. So, I was not speaking English.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got some odd jobs, like working at McDonald's first. It was my very first job in the U.S. kind of thing. I worked just for a month.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had another job working at Auto Trader magazines. Do you remember that?
No.
They used to sell, it's a magazine all the cars. But I was just like doing data entry, you know, because I couldn't speak English that well. So, and then finally, you know, I had confidence enough. You know, I had my teaching degree from Brazil, so I started to be a substitute teacher in Sacramento.
Was it a year ago, a year after you, like?
About, I would say, my first time being a substitute teacher was about a year and a half after I moved to the U.S.
Yeah, that's speed English
training.
Yeah,
it was still kind of limited. There were words that I was always afraid to pronounce in front of the students.
Yeah.
Because they did not come out right, you know.
I still have words.
Yeah, there's
like
their words. Yeah. You know exactly what they are. That it's kind of tricky. But yeah. So and then eventually I got a teaching job after the years.
Yeah.
But that was about when my ex-wife and I just got a divorce.
Uh-huh.
So that was 2004.
Yeah. So you lasted about 4 years once you moved to US.
So I was here. So we were in Sacramento. We got a divorce. And actually, I went back to Brazil. So I was there just traveling for, I was in Brazil for about, I would say, 9 months.
Did you get your papers when you got married?
Have
you become American then?
Ever since I stepped in the US, I already had, I had all my immigration work I've done already in Brazil prior to moving to the US.
Because you married in Brazil.
Because I married in Brazil to an American. Yeah. So I had all this process done. So when I arrived at the airport, I landed in Chicago. Mm-hmm. So right when I went through immigration and I gave them an envelope that they say, hey, they just give it them sealed. So they look into the envelope and they say, hey, let's come to this little room. It's like, okay.
So I go
to this little room. So they just, you know, take fingerprints and all these things. Yeah. I say, okay, so here is some papers that will allow you to work in the US.
Yeah.
So a month later, I got my green card in the mail. So I was not even expecting to be that fast.
That was fast.
But that was just because the process was already all done.
Yeah.
So I had my green card ever since I moved to the US. And then I got my citizenship just about 3 years after that.
And then you divorce.
Yeah, and then about a year later.
Yeah. So you got divorced as an American, you go back, you travel.
So yeah.
How did you come back to US again?
So I was in Brazil. So I submitted some applications online when I was in Europe still. And at one point I just decided, just like, hey, I'm just gonna move back.
Yeah.
So I flew back. Instead of course, going back to Sacramento, I moved to San Francisco. I had some friends there.
Yeah.
And then I got a teaching job.
Yeah.
So I was teaching PE at one of the middle schools.
So how did you end up in Oregon?
Yeah. So that's interesting. So I was teaching in middle school, like inner city California.
Yeah.
So I was in South San Francisco. Eventually, I was teaching in a school in Oakland. I just became statistics. Like in California, at least back then when I was teaching, 70% of teachers would quit within between 2 to 5 years of profession.
Yeah,
that was kind of how was the stats back then.
No, it's how did you end up in Oregon?
Yeah, so that's a link to the story. So when I was teaching, I kind of burned out.
Yeah.
Didn't want to do teaching anymore. So back then I was already dating my now wife, Valerie. Mm-hmm.
You met in San Francisco?
We met in San Francisco. You know, some mutual friends introduced us.
Mm-hmm. Is she from West Coast or where is she from?
She is from San Diego.
Yeah.
She's from San Diego, California. But she moved to San Francisco after college. She worked down there for a little bit and moved to San Francisco. So we were talking about, like, I hated teaching. So she gave me a little push. She said, hey, why don't you just quit and just go back to school? What I did. So one of those days, I just walked in, I resigned, and I had my plan was just to go back to school to get my engineering degree.
Yeah.
So that was about 2008 when we go into that big financial crisis in the US.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, California had, I think, one of the biggest deficit in their budget, was one of the biggest holes in the country. It might be still, I don't know, but at the time it was very bad.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ways during the depression that they found to kind of trying to save money to their coffers was, let's not subsidize education for people that already have a degree and are pursuing a second degree. So I could apply to grad school, but I did not want to do what I was doing anymore.
Yeah.
So as a person with a degree trying to pursue a second degree, I was not even allowed to apply at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know how long that stayed, but hey, I already had quit my job.
Yeah.
I was ready to go. Yeah. So I had to pick out a state to move.
Yeah.
You know, so my wife's firm in San Francisco had opened an office in Vancouver, Washington here. And I always liked Portland anyways. So to me, that would be my first choice to move. And she already had an office.
Why did you like Portland?
I don't know. Like when I had moved to the U.S. Right in the beginning, I came here to visit. I had a friend that lived here, and I don't know. I really liked it. It was nothing special. I didn't spend that much time here, but to me, it was just a easy choice in a way.
It's kind of easy.
When I thought about, like what state are you going to move? You know, like I kind of wanted to stay on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And one kind of silly criteria that I had for a city to live in is because, you know, I was very much into sports. I was a PE teacher. I had to pick a city that had an NBA team, at least. You know, when I was living in Sacramento, you know, the Kings were playing great.
They
were
very good teams. But like, you didn't pick up the best team.
Yeah, so it was great. So it's like, hey, you know.
2008, we got that, the guy that was...
He was a little bit after that, but yeah.
He was supposed to be the next Michael Jordan, and didn't happen.
Michael Jordan actually was, you know, one of the players that at Portland kind of decided not to pick.
I know.
And then it was just a funny criteria. It was not a serious criteria. Hey, you know.
Yeah, I get it.
If I go on a map, like I can go to a city that is big enough that it has a sports team.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, it made sense here. Not only I wanted to move to Portland, but my wife could just transfer and work in from my office.
And then you went to school here? Or
So I went to PSU, Portland State.
Oh, nice.
So I came to, specifically for me to go to school. So the goal was to stay, finish school, and move back to San Francisco.
Oh.
So 2 years in, we're still here, still thinking about moving back.
Yeah.
But and then as soon as I finished college, I was like, hey, okay, all right, ready to move back. And that's when my wife said, no, I don't want to move back.
Yeah. No, tell me about your company now. Let's do a little pitch because I know you went on your own, right?
Yeah. So after work for about 10 years for other firms, I just decided that was time for me to work for myself.
Yeah. What's your company name?
My company name is called LSP Structural. So it's just a one person. You know, it's just me.
And then there's an architectural plan. You come and you calculate if everything is
structurally
sound.
Yeah, so as of right now, like I've been doing a lot of small projects.
Yeah.
You know, and there's some architects that I reach out and there's some new houses that I've designed. And So little by little speaking up, I have a good stream of work coming now. So it's kind of nice.
Nice. That's wonderful. Okay. So you've been in Portland. You're a Portlander. Let's talk about what would you tell people like you in Brazil they would consider move to US? What would be your advice?
Oh, that's an interesting question because it's funny like how I came in a sort of a unique circumstances in which from day one I already had a green card. So I was very fortunate.
Yes, very fortunate.
So I never really had to actually feel that I needed to be very much integrated the Brazilian community for getting jobs or things here and there. Mm. So I didn't go through a typical Brazilian immigrant.
Yeah. I haven't met typical immigrant journey yet.
Yeah,
on my podcast, everybody has different journey.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, like there's a lot of people that are, you know, usually when somebody immigrates from Brazil, you know, they know a Brazilian that knows another one. And usually that's how you start getting jobs here and there.
I know, but you didn't even speak English.
Yeah.
So you had paperwork, but no language.
Yeah, no language.
I spoke English, but my paperwork expired. I was undocumented for a minute there, for a year and a half maybe. So I was illegal. They call it illegal, undocumented. So we all have, but I could speak, right? So your experience is like, okay, you have the paper, but you have no language.
Yeah, exactly, no language.
But what would you, in general, right? If people would think, you know, we all look up to America, it's like, you know, it's that shiny city on a hill. Not always, we have issues.
Yeah.
But it's still a very fascinating place. So what would be your quick
advice?
Well,
like for somebody from Brazil moving here, of course, one is, at least nowadays, like a lot more people speak English, of course, in Brazil.
You
know, it's a little bit different than when I moved here 25 years ago. So English is it's a little bit more of a thing down there. So, of course, you know, like getting, you know, a good skill, language skills is a good thing. But my recommendation, I think, would be like to not be stuck in a little Brazilian bubble because it's very easy for immigrants just to hang out among themselves. And not open up, you know, to be a little bit more integrated. I'm not necessarily saying integration in a way that, you're going to kind of put your culture aside and everything.
Yeah.
But
I agree with you. I had the similar experience. We have a really cute, friendly community of Czechs in Portland.
Yeah.
But when I used to live in Florida, I didn't like the Czech community at all. They were just together.
Exactly, yeah.
And the whole afternoon they playing video games and saying Americans have no culture. And I was just like, dude, you just play video games.
Exactly.
So, and I always had American friends because I was really fascinated by the culture here. And they look at me like I'm weird. Why are you hanging out with those Americans? They have no, you know. And I was like, dude, you're playing video games all day. What are you talking about? Go and do something that, you know, why would you can do that in Czech Republic.
Yeah.
So I agree with you.
Yeah.
Portland is different, but in Florida it was...
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and that's the thing. Like, you know, of course there are other... Again, if you move into Portland specifically, you're already probably in a good spot because, you know, there are places like... If you move to New York or some places in Massachusetts where there's a lot of Brazilians and, you know, even in some parts of, you know, California and Florida, you move, but you're just among mm-hmm. your peers, you're mm-hmm. not even learning English mm-hmm. that well, you know. But here in Portland, I guess there is not as much of a density mm-hmm. of Brazilians, mm-hmm. you know, Brazilians all over the place. But here, I just spot a Brazilian every once in a while, like during the World Cup, because and then you run into people with their jerseys and
Irish
speaking
pub.
Portuguese in bars.
Yeah.
But it's very rare. When I was in New York recently for just living there for a year, I would walk and hear Portuguese all the time. There mm-hmm. was a lot of Brazilians. But mm-hmm. in Portland, I almost never hear any Portuguese.
So advice is immerse yourself in the culture.
So here, in a way, you're already immersed.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so... And again, there is already a sense of advantage in a way of being in an area in which there's not that many, because in a way you immerse yourself more and you end up standing out more. Like an example, I'm probably the only Brazilian that a lot of people know here, mm-hmm. even though there's a lot of Brazilians around. So even with my profession, you know, I'm a structure engineer, and sometimes it's easy to remember, hey, Leandro Pimenta, you know, I'm not going to forget, that's the Brazilian engineer that worked in the project.
Yeah.
So just to make sure that you kind of put yourself out, integrate more, and not just be locked into your Brazilian community, because, you know, you have a very better chance to stand out here compared to if you move to a place where there's a lot of Brazilians.
That's a great advice. You know? Yeah, that's great. I feel it's also very American of you saying that.
You know,
but that's my wife always told me, right? That I was like looking for jobs. And I was like, nobody's interested in my education in Czech Republic. I had two university degrees. And she's like, you standing out. And I was like, I can't see it, you know? And it's we all doubt it. Ourselves in a sense, but it's kind of nice to live in this world when you think that you have a value, right?
Exactly.
And you're standing out, then you're like, nobody cares. So I love that advice. It's great. Yeah. Last thing, how do you like my yerba mate?
Oh, it's delicious.
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
You
it is.
Are
I was
being nice.
Ask, about to ask for a little bit more.
Yeah, I'll give you some more, but this, you know, it makes me happy because you know, if I have a Brazilian yerba mate, check it out on obviously www.obviously.love. And Leandro really likes my yerba mate. That makes me happy.
Yeah, I'm going to try to make the iced version.
Yeah. No.
The Brazilian way.
So thank you so much for coming. This was great. It was nice talking to you, and hopefully we'll chat again soon.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure thing.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.